It's time to start.
It's time. Good afternoon. Welcome to a session on building the perfect Windows 8.1 image or reference image. I'm Johan. This is Michael. We'll be your hosts in this arena for not only one session, but actually two sessions in a row. For following this session is a Q&A deployment session coming directly after. So we'll be here for a while and have a good time. And during this time, we will show you step by step how to build that really, really great reference image. I'm an architect with Knowledge Factory, and you are? Geek?
Yep. A techie guy? I can't actually remember my title anymore.
I do. Senior Executive Consultant.
Yeah, but I changed that into something else, but I can't remember what it was.
We'll deal with that one for now.
Yeah, that's fine.
We love questions, so anytime during the session, if you want to ask anything, just raise your hand and yell, and we'll try to answer it as quickly as possible. Something I do recommend, if you haven't get on Twitter yet, do that, please. We will take questions that way as well. Each session on Twitter has its own code. So it's the session code up in the, your right-hand corner, with a hashtag in between, before it, and you remove the hyphen. So I'm actually monitoring that feed right here. So if you post anything, we'll see that too. So option one, raise your hand. Option two, tweet. Okay. In this session, we will teach you how to build a reference image that works with every type of deployment that is out there. We will focus on the Microsoft technologies, but it happens to be that the stuff that we show you happens to work with everything that is out there, everything that can accept a WIM image. Can you deploy this reference image too? We will focus on Windows 8.1 in this session. But the exact same processes works great for Windows 7 SP1 that I know many of you still deploy, but also for servers. 2012, 2012 R2, 2012 R2, and 2008 R2. Now, this environment, we will have a demo environment. We do lots of live demos in this session. It is available for download. If you go to my blog, which I have here, Deployment Research, Michael's blogs is Deployment Bunny, and I'm not kidding, it's really that bunny. If you go to research and you search for the keyword hydration, you will find a massive zip file that you can download. It's about 320K in size, so it will fit on an old floppy. But it's actually a ready-made deployment chair that will build these virtual machines that we are demonstrating here to you today on stage. So if you are eager to go back home and start playing around the lab with this, that's an excellent start to get that going. So all these machines will be demoed, and they are, as you see, available for download. We highly recommend that when you create references, well, put it this way, there are a few sure ways of making me upset. Michael knows most of them. But and that's to show me a 10-page document where the title says something along the lines with, this is what we do when we create a reference image. Step one, start the physical machine. I'm already angry at that point. Put in the DVD with Windows 8 on it, and start go through everything manually. And then you install all the applications that you want in that reference image manually. And then you run Windows Update manually. No, it should be automated. As long as you guys automate it one way or another, I kind of like that. We will show you one way of doing that, but as long as you do automation, I'm good.
You know, one of the most common questions we get when we attend to these kind of events is that I have not been doing the process you describe, and that has been working for many years, but now it doesn't work. Figure that. I'm telling you to use this method, and that works. Yeah, but I have been doing it in another way, and that has been working, but now it doesn't.
That's take this one more time.
Should I repeat that?
The point of a reference image is that that's something you will clone to a massive amount of computers, hopefully. A slight error in the reference image doesn't get exactly smaller because you decide to deploy that broken image to 1,000 machines. You want that image to be processed, to be repeatable with quality and equally good every single time you create it. And you want it to be fast. So the last bullet, steal with pride, it's a metaphor. Doesn't mean stealing. It means take advantage of other work that has been done already to get that solution up and running quickly. Now, when it comes to images, this is actually one of my longest days ever. I was in New York, and I had invited my daughter to go with me, and we went shopping for 12 straight hours, mostly clothing stores. But this one I found in a clothing store. But it also applies to reference images. In projects, me and Michael, we fight quite hard to keep a thin image if possible. Because a thin image, and I'm not meaning an image without updates. When I say thin image, I mean an image with security updates. I mean with possibly a few runtimes, .NET framework, and a few other components. It's still a thin image to me. Because a thin image allows you to be more flexible when you deploy it. The more stuff, the more applications you pour into a reference image, the more static it becomes, the more costly it becomes to maintain it, and you can't be as flexible when you deploy it. For example, if you deploy an image with Config Manager, 2012 R2, you can easily create lists of applications for different departments, countries, whatever you have, and you can simply feed that list of apps into a sequence that deploys your thin image. But if you have everything in the image, you simply cannot do that. You don't want to start uninstalling stuff. But sometimes you come to a customer where, yeah, we like your talk. We like your idea about the thin image. However, we are dealing with students. We have classrooms that we need to deploy in the morning and maybe deploy one more time before the evening classes kicks in. And we have a two-hour window. Yeah, I'm sorry, if you have 200 applications, there is no way you will be able to deploy a thin image, install 200 apps afterwards, and still make that two-hour window. So for those types of environments, yeah, the image will be thicker. But again, it will be slightly more costly to manage.
I think you nailed it there, because one of the most important things is when I go to a customer is to ask, what is the time? What do you mean time? What is the maximum time I'm allowed to install Windows? We don't have that. Okay, that's great. Let's put 100 hours in that. That means I'm never going to need to do any reference or image. Oh, well, you can't do 100 hours. Okay, so you do have a limit. Yeah, like, I don't know, 4 maybe? Okay, 4. That means I can do a thin image. No, but sometimes we need 2. Okay, so is it 4 or 2? Make up your mind. Maybe there is 1 hour or 15 minutes. So the time decides what goes into the image.
What happens when you start to do Windows 7 and Windows 8 deployments is that you quickly realize that the images are quite much larger than they used to be in the XP timeframe that I hope most of you are either away from or in the process of moving away from. But you can easily have an image that is 4, 5, 6 gigs in size, only if you just add in a bunch of updates and components and stuff. Add in Office and you suddenly have an image that is like 5 gigs in size at least. But again, the more stuff you put into it, the more static it becomes. Now, I said I will be angry if I find a physical machine being used, and that is true. I recommend to use a virtual machine instead. The beautiful thing of using a VM, and I don't care what VM platform you guys are using, pick one that you like and use that one. But use a virtual machine because that image, that device, that machine, that computer has very few devices that are likely to break stuff in a future deployment. I've been to a customer who's been building reference images on a Toshiba laptop. And when deploying to Toshiba laptops and HP and Dell, it worked great. But when deploying the same one to Lenovo, it didn't work. Because they were sharing the same touchpad driver, which happened to have the same plug-and-play ID, and suddenly we were trying to load Toshiba drivers on a Lenovo and vice versa. Even worse, sometimes when you install a driver or driver application, it comes with an app and a service. And SysPrep, who's supposed to do some cleaning, doesn't clean that stuff out. So now you have HP hotkeys on a box that you're trying, or an image that you're trying to deploy to a Lenovo. And I can tell you Lenovo is not very happy about trying to start that HP service. And when you go into the control panel and try to uninstall the HP hotkeys, you get a message saying, oh, sorry, setup can only be run on HP hardware.
We have a question over there.
Yes.
So the question is about print drivers in an image. I would say a print driver never goes into a reference image. It goes into the deployment image. Keep all the drivers you can out of the reference image, if possible.
Yeah, with a few exceptions that we will cover later today, but in general, you don't want any drivers in the reference image. Sometimes you add a mouse driver to make it easier in WinP and such, or a remote card, but most times you don't need any drivers. But please use virtual machines. You get a superior image, and you can take advantage of snapshots and make it quicker to create that reference image.
I think we can make it easier. If someone comes up to me and say, I'm trying to do a reference image on a physical machine, my reply will be, stop doing that. Can you help me? Yeah, I just did. Stop doing that.
In the Microsoft flora of technology terms or terminology in general, these are quite frequent. And these means two things. One, light touch, LTI, or zero touch, CDI, they describe a process. Light touch meaning you have a wizard when you do a deployment. Zero touch meaning you don't have a wizard when you do deployment. But it also refers to two products, or actually one product but two parts of it that Microsoft provides, and that's MDT 2013. Because that product has two tracks in it. One that is a standalone deployment solution that we will use to create reference images. And the other one are extensions to a config manager. So depending on who you ask and where you read it, this may mean two things. But we use the LightTouch platform to create reference images. So now I'm going to demonstrate to you my massive skills. For the second time, a tech ed in WordPad. I'm really good. So why, and you're not allowed to answer, why on earth should we be using light touch to create a reference image if we have, for example, a config manager in our environment? How many of you are running config manager? A good few of you, I would say 60% maybe. I mean, if you're using MDT LightTouch to deploy it, yeah, it's a no-brainer. Of course, you use the same stuff. But for Config Manager, at least you have an option. Either you can do LightTouch for the ref image, or you can do Config Manager. So why LightTouch? I will give you a few examples, yeah? Faster, and I would say easier. Me and Michael, we do a bunch of classes. And when we do the MDT part of the class where they learn to build a reference image, that entire process, end to end, is typically 45 minutes. From beginning to complete. Not the build, of course, but the setup of it. Exact same process for Config Manager, creating all the packages and everything around, typically 2.5 hours. So what? You do it once, you're good to go. But in general, building reference images in LightTouch, in a year, you spend less hours doing that. It doesn't mean you cannot do it in Config Manager, it's faster and easier. And a bonus here, you actually accidentally learn to do deployment in Config Manager because the processes are the same, the rules are the same, the sequences are more or less the same, built by the same team. Now, another reason to do them in LightTouch is that the image that you get is extremely, extremely flexible. And I can't even type flexible. Not so master after all, right? You can use that image with everything. You can take the same image and deploy to using LightTouch, using Windows Deployment Services, using Altiris, using SendWorks, using Config Manager, using ImageX, using DSIM. Any product you can find that deploys a WIM file, you can use it. You can add it to your VMware library, apply it to a disk and clone it. You can import it to a VMM, apply it to a VHDX file and clone it. Same image, can you use for everything. If you guys build the reference images in Config Manager, guess what? It puts the client in there. Can only be used with Config Manager. And for those of you who did that with CMO 7, and you had your Windows 7 image in CMO 7, and now you upgrade to 2012, guess what? You need to recreate that image because you have a really old client in that image. If you had been using LightTouch, you would have an image without the client, and you can just add it over and continue as you are. Another thing is it's very easy in a LightTouch sequence to pause it during deployment. Add a suspend action. Not because we encourage you to do manual steps, but sometimes you would like to check on the image before you seal it and sys prep and capture it. Or you have that really special app that just, it's impossible to automate it. Yeah, then it could be okay to have a stop, do that one manual step, and then have the sequence continue and do the rest.
One of the things that Johan is actually telling you is that we are building it this way because we don't know what's going to happen tomorrow. Because if I know what's going to happen tomorrow, I will actually buy a lottery ticket. I will buy the correct one. But I don't know which number is going to win, so I can't do that. We want to build it this way because someday someone will say, we're going to do VDI. Oh, we're going to do then I need to redo everything. We're going to do thin clients. Oh, I need to redo everything. We're going to do something else that we don't do today. So if you actually know that you're going to run Configuration Manager for the rest of your life with a 64-bit image and that's never going to change, that's fine. But I don't think you know that because something could happen.
We even see customers running Config Manager for most of their environment. And then they acquire a few companies every now and then, and they need to be able to migrate them in quickly, and there is no time to spin out or scale out the Config Manager environment. So they use LightTouch to quickly get a deployment going. So same image, same everything. Another feature you get by using LightTouch is, I'm going there, getting there.
We have trainings for that, you know.
Typing?
Yeah, 4-day trainings.
Copy profile is a feature that's been around for a long time. It was used quite heavily in Windows 7. I don't see it so much in Windows 8.1 because there are other features now in 8.1 that allows you to, for example, export a start screen and such. But if you want to use this feature, you need to have an admin account, an administrator profile. And if you guys build reference images in Config Manager, by default you don't have one because Config Manager does the setup through local system. This feature is something, despite the incorrect documentation on TechNet, it's something that happens at deployment time, has nothing to do with the reference image per se, but the feature will copy the admin profile to default user during deployment. But if you don't have an admin profile, it turns out Windows Setup has difficulties in copying it over. They're not having it hard to copy. Check. But if we build it in LightTouch, we do have an admin profile, and then the Config Manager can actually copy it for you at deployment time. LightTouch can do that at deployment time. So these are some of the reasons that we like to work with LightTouch. And you found another one? Deleted? No, delegate,
delegation.
Right?
Let's assume that I'm the Configuration Manager administrator, and Johan is my image monkey. I wouldn't trust him for my life to be an admin because he wants to do a reference image in Configuration Manager. That means he's going to find a package that is incorrect. So he's going to change that and break something. You create your reference image, and when you're done, you give me the WIM file and I deploy that. So delegation is really nice.
Delegation is really nothing about copying a folder and you're done. But there are downsides to this as well. How do you get a reference image in LightTouch updated with patches? You install a separate, dedicated WSUS and approve about the same updates as you already have in Config Manager. And then you configure LightTouch to use that, and I will show you later how that is done. This is the downside because this is extra admin work for you guys. But there is a reason for doing that. In config manager, there is an action that installs updates. Its name is install software updates. This step is, I think, the step in config manager sequences I've been troubleshooting the most over the years. It's simply leave room for improvements. If you feed this action with 160 updates, it's very likely not to install all those updates. But if you feed it with 16 updates, it's very likely to install them. So to get this action in config manager to work perfectly, simply make sure that your reference image is fairly up to date. And the same action in config in LightTouch is rock solid, no matter how many updates you apply to it. Simply rock solid.
But Johan, a lot of our customers says, well, you know, can't you do like offline injection of patches, like offline management of patches? I mean, that's going to patch the system. I don't need to rebuild that image. I just build one and then I just, you know, offline inject all the patches because all the patches are not available.
Well, and if you like pain, that's actually quite a good idea because offline servicing turn out to be a bit painful. It's a good idea in theory, so far as we've not been working perfect, put it that way. Some updates, as Mike said, that was simply don't inject. Some updates, they require multiple reboots, and they don't work. And then you have components that doesn't have updates for offline servicing, like Office. There is no offline servicing of Office. I recommend to have that in a build and capture process simply because it always works, have all updates, it's rock solid, and then also config manager becomes rock solid when you deploy that image that you created here. So yes, you have to take those extra 10 minutes to spin up a WCS server somewhere and maintain that with updates on a monthly basis, approve them.
So. And for organizations that are not allowed to install an extra WSUS server, you call it a coffee machine, and then you install that instead, and that works too.
All right. So how do we do this? Well, in LightTouch, you create a deployment share. One or more folders, you need at least one. In that folder, you start to pour in content. You start to pour in apps that you would like to have in the reference image. You start in adding the images you would like to add. You skip drivers for now, and you create sequences that will drive the deployment. And if I open this tab for apps, this is where I have added a few applications I think makes sense to put in a reference image. The exception is maybe this one, unless everybody have it or has it in the environment. Then it makes sense to put it there because it's a large app, it can be updated for Microsoft Update or WSUS, and it takes some time to deploy it. So it makes sense to have it in the reference image. The other ones are just runtimes. Then if I go to my sequence and open it up, I have one Windows 8 Enterprise and one with the update. In general, today, this is the one you would like to use. It contains every security update, almost, up to April 2nd or 8th, whatever date it was on it. So it's quicker to deploy than the other one. So Windows 8, one update. Then in this image, I have simply added in to install those apps. And I also added in runtimes like .NET Framework to the reference image, because I think it makes sense. Often you deploy Windows because you want to run apps on it eventually. I meet very few customers who deploy an image just to have it there. They normally want to run stuff on it. So stuff that applications need anyway, I tend to add in my reference image. Then, to use the WSUS server I had, I need to enable those actions. And by default, they are disabled. So I need to go in here and say enable. And enabling is done through clearing disable. It's a Microsoft thing to do that. And I talked about the suspend before. What I can do is I can actually add a pause if I need it. So I can do that. And that's just a built-in script that will abort the sequence at that point. But if I don't need it, well, I don't add it either. So now I have a sequence that will install Windows, apply the image, install all those apps, run Windows Update as many times as needed, and eventually, in the end of things, it will sysprep and capture it to a WIM file for you. Earlier this morning, or just before lunch, I posted a blog article with a, I thought, catchy title. building reference images like a boss. And in that article, if you have slow disks on the machine that you're building reference images on, there is a free download from Starwind, which creates a RAM disk. So you can create a 20 gig RAM disk on Windows 8 or Windows Server 2012 R2, and you can put your VHDX file on that one, and then you build your image on that one, and it's really fast. 5 gigabytes per second read and write, that's pretty good. IOPS in the range of 200,000 beats most hard drives. It actually doesn't beat the solid state card that much, but if you have a local disk that is a sort of a mechanical one, RAM drive is much, much faster. Anyway, this sequence does its things, and to kick off a deployment, I simply start a VM that I happen to have here. Oh, I don't have it. I need to create it. I need to go into the UI manually and do things. Of course not.
Or you could buy System Center Virtual Machine Manager and create a template. And
or not. PowerShell is king, always been. I happen to have a script here. Wrong folder. Have to be in the right folder. This is just a VB script, the PowerShell script that builds a reference image, mounts it on the boot media that LightTouch is using, and then starts it, and then waits for it, and then deletes it. So if I need a reference image, I go to my PowerShell prompt, I run that script. It will now create a VM, mount it on the ISO, and start it. So what I can do now, I can go back to my console, search for ref, and it's currently running, and you can see it's now booting WinP5 that will eventually connect back to my deployment share, fully automated, because I put in the credentials in the boot image to do that. And no, it's not a security risk doing so, because that ISO you maintain, it's on your secure folder somewhere that you only you have access to. So yes, I put in the credentials, and with any luck, it will connect and kickstart my deployments now.
And the worst thing that could happen if someone steals it is that someone else might be able to help you out to create a reference image, because basically that's what it can do, nothing else.
So I configured this one to ask me two questions. What reference image? All right, I would like a Windows 8 one today. Okay. Where do we want to store it? On this server with that file name. This is not the default file name. I've added some stuff here. That generates a different file name. So if I go back to my server, open the rules file that controls everything, this is what I added. Backup file equals sequence ID and a bunch of VB script strings that will add the current date and hour and minute, making sure I will never have two reference images being captured and trying to overwrite each other and fail, which is the default behavior in MDT. If there is a WIM file already, it will fail. It will give you an error code 2, RC backup failed. But by naming it like this, hopefully you will never have a crash. You have to have seconds in maybe as well if you're doing really many reference images. But you saw I got two questions in the wizard. If I would like to automate everything, I simply go down here and say skip sequence, yes, skip capture, yes. So I'm just changing in a text file, and I'm now changing the behavior of that wizard. So if I save this file and I restart that client again, reset.
No, you need to select reset. You selected do not. Try it again. There you go.
Thank you for the
information.
Support. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's difficult.
Yeah, I know. Lots of buttons, like two.
Yeah. All right, so same process once again. We changed the text file on the server, so hopefully this time we won't get any questions at all. It will just continue to build. Hopefully logging in. You have a question? Yeah? Whoa. Please repeat, sir. Okay, where did I put in the sequence to run? Apparently you can see it's running at least, fully automated. So where did I put that in to run? I will just kill this one. It's just a deployment that will complete. So it's prep, capture, and store the WIM file on my server. Fully automated, updated, everything. Back to your question, sir. If I go to my server, here, this is where I specify here. Every sequence in MDT has an ID, and I had specified that ID. So that's how I can automate it. You can also do this on a per MAC address basis. You can have three VMs with different MAC addresses, and you can have a default selection for each MAC address. So you simply kick off the right VM, or have your script take that as a parameter and set a MAC address when you're using it. So either way works. Sorry? Change the ini file, exactly. Good comment there, Alex. All right. So we have a process that fully automates and builds a reference image. Now, what if you want to change stuff? What if you want to make modifications? You do that in the sequence. You do them here, because then they are documented and always up to date. And when your manager asks for documentation, because he or she will at some point, you do the following. You go to the control folder where sequences are stored. You find the sequence in question. You open it in Notepad or something, and you print it.
Sometimes they require Word document, and in that case, you paste it into Word, and then you print it.
Put it this way, you will not be asked again. Simple as that. And the point is, you don't have to. This is a living document. If you really want to impress on management, on the deployment guide's webpage, there is a XML template that you can download that allows you to open this one in Explorer so it actually looks similar to what you see in the workbench. So if you go to the deployment guide's blog, search for templates, you'll find it, and then you can view it in a browser as well. Pretty cool.
I see you have some components put into your reference image, like the Silverlight and C++ and...
Yeah, apps. Yeah.
Okay. So, for instance, you could just create one VB script and install all the applications.
Could.
But for documentation reason and for troubleshooting reasons, we have each of them as a single line.
These four lines actually installs eight applications. These four lines install eight applications because this is just a wrapper. If I go back into the file system and check those, this is just the VB script. Open up in Notepad or Notepad++. It's simply a VB script that will detect if you are on 32 or 64. And if you are on 64, it will also install the 64-bit version as well. So runtimes, you have 32 and 64, you need to install them both if you are 64-bit. So this was just to reduce the number of apps that I needed. And yes, these scripts are available for download. And something I would like to show you, if you go to my blog here and you search for the keyword labs, you will find an image from a train. But beneath that image, there are links to step-by-step guides that will do exactly this. Available on TechNet Virtual Labs, 45 minutes, how to from zero to end create a reference image. Then there is a lab on how to take that image and deploy it through LightTouch. And then there is a final lab doing the same thing but for Config Manager. Everything end-to-end, all the scripts are there, everything, the lab manuals, 20 pages on each lab, just to have to get it going in a good way for production use. So it's a really good starting point. I also recommend the MBA videos. Michael posted a link here on his Bunny blog to that as well. So.
And that just happens to be the same labs we are running as instructor-led labs here at TechEd. I think we do have sessions tomorrow. So if you want to do the Configuration Manager Windows 8 deployment, you're welcome. We know that all these sessions have been overbooked. In reality, they are not. Just show up about 5 minutes before and you will most likely get a place.
Yeah. And if you have nothing to do at night at the hotel room and you manage to get an internet connection, you can run these labs. Simple as that. Now, what if I want to build a reference image for VDI? What if I want to build one for VM libraries? What if I want to have something that is not the Vim file, but rather a VMDK file for VMware or a VHDX file for Hyper-V?
Yes, there is a selection when you deploy, when you create a reference image called create a VHD. Just run sysprep.
If I change the rule files back again to where they were.
Yeah, exactly. Because that's really cool.
So skip capture, no.
Mm-hmm.
Fair enough. And I can take another VM. I can create a new one. There is an option in the wizard that when you start it, you can say, deploy this, but don't sysprep and capture it. And you would think that would be an awesome idea for a VMM library. It turns out it's not. The reason it's not is because if you select that, you don't get the cleanup that the default sequence does with your images. There are built-in templates that does some really nice cleaning of the reference image in MDT, but they are only called if you create a Vim file. So if you select this option instead, do sysprep and just create the VHDX file, it won't do those cleanup operations. So I recommend don't do that because you guys need a Vim file anyway. So you have the Vim file. So I will turn this one off and it will be deleted eventually. In the templates folder on the server where you installed MDT, there is a Vim script ini, Vim script ini file that contains a list of everything that is not being captured in the Vim file. If you select the other option, this is not being used. So I have a Vim file. What I do instead is I steal a script that me and Michael wrote for an upcoming book, but we actually published this script already because this was like last year,
yeah,
Christmas time. That's how we celebrated Christmas, PowerShell. So I have a script that will actually create a VHDX file from a Vim file. So I just run Vim file and I specify a Vim file that I have. And I specify the output, VHDX file. Where do I want my VHDX file? Mike VHDX.
That works.
VHDX. That's good.
Yeah. Now, there's a couple of things that this make really good sense. Number one, let's assume that you actually need two. You need a WIM file and you need a virtual drive because the virtual drive is supposed to be used in the VDI solution. You cannot create them at the same time. There might be a difference in them. And for user consistency, users basically hate when there's a difference. When they log on to the physical machines, they have an icon. When they log on to the virtual machines, they don't have the icon. They're going to do panic. It's going to be like crazy because the icon is not located in the same location.
This script is available for download on Mike's site, Deployment Bunny, but it's named completely different. It's named create VHDX file instead of new. We've renamed it for the here. Same script though. But this actually creates a generation of two VMs. So it creates all the UEFI partitions and everything that is required for a Gen 2 VM, which is the fastest way to run Windows 8.1 in Hyper-V. Now, behind the scenes, the sequence is using ANA 10 files. And in general, we don't recommend you to edit them, That's something you normally do through deployment time instead. But sometimes there are stuff that you want to have in an attend file already in the reference image. And if I go back to my demo environment, here, it's still creating that V8X file, so I will skip that for now. Every sequence in the deployment share, in addition to the XML file that was the sequence, also have the unattend file that belongs with it. So if you need to change it, do not open this one in Notepad. Instead, go to the sequence in question, go to the OS Info tab, and click Edit Unattend XML. The first time you do this, it will take you about 3 minutes, because it creates the catalog file at that point, assuming it's a 64-bit one. But if you've already done it once, it's quite quick, and it will open that answer file in Image Manager, which is the preferred way to edit it. So for example, if I would like to disable the developer tools, because they break my server deployments when doing ILO cards from HP, I can simply do that. So you can see I've actually done a few changes here. So I can do that in an attend file, and then the sequence will happily use them. If you need to troubleshoot this, SysPrep is actually using the same log file as the main setup is doing, and that's the setup act log file. The main thing to break SysPrep is antivirus software. So please don't include antivirus software in your image. Install them at deployment time instead. I know there are tweaks to get them working. I have no customer spending weeks on it, but that's the most common reason to break SysPrep. So,
I actually know one really simple way to break SysPrep too. If you go back to WSIM, and you're going to do something you're never going to do in reality, but we know customers, yes. No, not that one. Take the other one.
Foundation package?
Yes, do the foundation. Because after a while, people realize, hey, I can add roles and feature by adding this. So they go through the list, and they might want to add a Telnet client. You click twice, and then you select the Telnet client. And hey, I got the Telnet client. That's an easy approach. Now, if you look at the number, you're going to see it says 639600-16384. That means it's version specific. That unattend XML file is now very version specific. So you download a new version of Windows 8, the update version of it. Doesn't have the same one. Now you're going to have a really nice screen when you deploy that reference image that says, failed. Try again. And you try again, and again, and again. And you can try forever, and that's never going to work. Because it's actually trying to add the old version of that client application to that new version of Windows.
So roles, we recommend you use the sequence to add, like I showed you when adding the .NET framework. But you can add, where did I put it here? You can add other roles as well. So if you really would like to add that Telnet client, you can do it here instead. And this always works with all versions of the operating system.
And the same goes for things like you want to enable RDP. Create a VB script. Create a PowerShell script. Put it in as an application, because that will be consistent for the next version and the next version and the next version. Otherwise, you need to be there in that unattend XML file and find that location and hope it works this time, and you spend just hours, days, or weeks.
All right. So now we've demonstrated how to create WIM files that you can use to deploy to physical boxes. We have demonstrated how to create VHDX files so you can deploy it to virtual machines or just clone them quickly. But there are additional ways of deploying Windows.
Yes. Ah, you mean the Windows to Go?
Yeah.
Anybody tried Windows to Go? That's cool. I guess most of you are techies, right? We don't have that much marketing people in this room.
We normally don't drive that attention.
No, normally we don't. The thing is that I see a lot of techies doing this. They have a Windows PE in the back pocket as, you know, the if something breaks, I can just boot up on a Windows PE, and they do these command lines and the really cool geeks.
Hardcore.
I have a Windows to go in my back pocket. I think it's easier to run Windows, actually, because then you can like access internet and copy files and do pretty much whatever you like.
And music while doing that.
Yes, you can run Spotify on this, it works too, or any other music application. So Windows to go is a bit special when you deploy it. Number one, it needs to have drivers the first time it boots. And you may ask yourself, what kind of drivers? And here's the fun thing, everybody says the same thing, oh, you need storage drivers. No, you don't. That's the only thing you don't need, because it's running on a USB 3 stick, and Windows 8 has drivers for that. So storage drivers, no, we don't need that. Well, we need graphic drivers.
May need?
Maybe, but that's mostly for convenience. Otherwise, and you won't notice this, but an end user will actually see this. They fire up the machine, and it starts like in, you know, 1024 by 768, and then it takes like a minute or so, and then it resizes. And that's going to be a help desk call because, you know, something happened, and then you need to call help desk. I think.
But here's the thing.
So you don't need that, right?
But you do need a few drivers. That makes sense to add at least network drivers, because it turns out it's difficult to download the rest of the drivers from Microsoft Update if you don't have network drivers.
Yeah, and it doesn't support IP over avian carriers, so you can't do that either. You really need to have a network driver.
Yeah. Terrible packet loss.
Terrible packet loss. So you need to have that. And
demo?
Demo.
Yeah. Just checking.
Oh, it's demo. Yeah, that's cool. Is that my screen? Can you see my screen?
Yes.
If
looks
I do like
yours.
This, yes,
looks
like mine.
Makes noises.
I know it looks strange. I have Visual Studio applications on my machine. I'm sorry about that. I am actually a techie. I'm not a dev guy. I just want to...
Could be my fault.
Yeah, could be. Everything is your fault. So let's see how we do that. So I'm going to open up the deployment workbench. And here's the thing. You need to have drivers.
A few.
And there's two ways of doing that. You can, number one, put that in your reference image, so the drivers is in there, right? That's one option. The other option is to not do that, instead injecting the drivers when you create the USB device. You also need to be aware of the fact that there's different ways of creating the USB device. You can either let the user create your USB device, which is a dangerous thing, or you can create it on your own. So if we go into drivers, you're going to see I have something called Windows to Go drivers. I have a bunch of drivers. And the first thing customers ask me is, yeah, but how do you do with make and model? That's not really going to work. So what kind of drivers do we need to have? We need to have the vendor driver. This is going to be like ProWin 32, ProWin 64. You go to NVIDIA, you go to all these vendors' sites and get as generic drivers as possible.
Because you never know which hardware that USB stick is going to end up in, so you like to at least make it work reasonably well. Doesn't have to be perfect, but it needs to work.
And you need like chipset drivers, so get the most common chipset drivers and just throw them in. Do I need to have old drivers? No, Windows 8 doesn't run on old hardware anyhow, so it doesn't matter. So we need to do that, and then we go into the advanced configuration, selection profiles, and create a new one called
Windows to Go.
Windows to Go drivers.
Lucky guess.
Oh, yeah. You're a smart guy. Out of box drivers, Windows to Go drivers. And we have that. Done. What do we do next? Let's go into the reference image itself. And do properties, task sequence, find a driver injection step, pre-install, inject drivers, and Windows to go. And we can't use plug and play. I mean, we really need to bang them in, right? They need to be there. And this is the same way you do for printer drivers. You shove them in. So you create another step, but you don't do it for reference images. So this way, I have all my drivers in here. And now I can create a reference image, and I have the image, and then I can apply that, of course, to a USB device. How do you do that? Well, you can run this built-in application. Anybody use the built-in application to create a Windows to Go stick? Was it really good? You can like join domain and things? Could you do anything at all? Yeah, it's like, congratulations to your new computer. No, this is an old computer in a hotel. But anyhow, thank you. Will that work in reality? No, it doesn't. We've seen customers trying to do that. They really let the user create their own sticks and say, you can go home now and then you can work from home. They're going to come back pretty soon. They can't access the network. They're not joined into the domain. They don't have access to anything at all. So how do you fix that?
PowerShell?
Yeah, as usual. Usually it is PowerShell. In this case, it actually is PowerShell.
And every single script we demonstrate is already available for download.
Yes.
You have to do some creative search for it.
So what we need to do is that we need to define what WIM file we're supposed to use. We also need to define what kind of domain we're supposed to join. Everything you can do here is on command line and things like that. So this script actually creates the unattended XML file on the fly. So this is pretty much a rip-off of what LightTouch does or what Configuration Manager does. It's just doing it in PowerShell. So this is the WIM file. We create an unattended XML file, which we then apply to that unique USB stick, which means that you can now have a small factory of creating USB sticks. You just define the name of it. We also... could use the function of creating a random computer name. Maybe you want to define the computer name. It's a smart thing to do. I have a friend sitting in the front row here, and he's going to get a USB device from me. That's going to be a computer. I know him. He's going to use it for a long time, so I want to name it correctly, put it in the correct OU so I don't remove that account. Or maybe that doesn't matter because we have a school class of people and they're going to use a USB stick for one day and then they're supposed to return it. And that's not going to happen. So we can either use a random name and create that. Maybe you want to define the password, or maybe you want to use the randomizer for password. So that is a homebrewed complexity versus simple password generator.
Bunny style.
And I've been very simple. I removed all the strange characters on different strange keyboards. So it actually works. Whatever keyboard you have, it's going to be the same characters all the time. Well, then it's not that secure. Yeah, I know. So we check that.
I'm happy you require at least one digit in the password.
Yes, we do require that. And then we have some other small things that works around. If you don't specify anything, everything is specified in this settings. So you can either, on command line or from an XML file, use that, or you can use the static information in here. And then it prints it out on the screen, creates the unattended XML file, and then it finds the USB stick. Now, it's a good thing to have just one Windows to Go stick at a time, and not the one that you're actually using, because it's in use. It will be erased pretty fast. I had an issue this morning, and this is actually an issue with PowerShell. I mean, it's automated and fast, right? It's actually too fast. So when you create the partition and try to format the partition immediately, it's in a read-only state. So you need to wait a second or two, or you get a really slow computer that works too. So we need to have two partitions. That's why you need to have a special USB device. You need to have a USB stick that is a hard drive. It's actually an SSD drive, because we need two partitions to be able to do both UEFI and traditional firmware. So we create two partitions. And we apply the image. And when we apply the image, we apply the boot files. And then we join the domain. We use an application called dejoin. So dejoin,
offline domain join,
yes, is getting an object from Active Directory. It's a blob. So we create that. And the good thing about Server 2012 R2 and Windows 8.1 is that it actually allows you to specify the OU path and all the policies that is needed for this machine to use things like direct access. And maybe it also needs to have specific certificates. So we get a computer blob from Active Directory that contains name, OU, all the certificates, and all the group policy settings. So when this machine boots up the first time, it's fully functional. So we get that, and then we put that into that image that I have on my USB drive. And then we added this. So if you don't create your reference image with drivers, this is the way to add drivers at a later time. You just put all the drivers you want to have in a certain folder, it's going to enumerate them and push them in. Maybe you want to have a bunch of patches. It was a while since you actually created that, and there is a couple of security patches that you really want to have injected into the image before you give it away. And the best way is, of course, to do a new image, but you don't have time to do that. So you do have offline patch management. So it's going to do that too. And when it's done, you're going to get a text file that says, this was the name of that USB device, the password, if you had a random one, and all that information. So now you have a factory to create all these. Is this hard to run? Absolutely.
We have seen customers trying to use all these USB type duplicators that exist to clone USB sticks en masse. The problem is when you clone a USB stick, it's a clone. By using just the PowerShell credit, they get the uniqueness, and it's actually quite fast. Yep. So if you find someone that is willing to just run the command over and over again, you can quickly generate a few hundred of these.
That's a USB monkey, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Anybody want to volunteer for that? So you just run the script, and here's the password for that, and it's finding the USB stick, and it's formatting. And this is kind of boring to watch. It's like watching paint dry, pretty much. But this is the way to create these images.
A cool thing, if you don't have hardware to test Windows to Go with, you can actually test Windows to Go in Hyper-V.
Yeah. So let's assume that this was done and everything is done, and I have my other one here, which is, you know, already done, and you want to verify that it works. You want to verify it actually works in UEFI, and you want to verify it works in a BIOS machine. So you plug the machine in, you fire up Hyper-V, the Hyper-V manager, and here we have a Windows to Go, and you go to settings, and you pick up the hard drive, and it says not found. Okay. But I can change that by going into my disk management.
It has to be online.
Offline.
Offline, yeah.
Has to
it's
be
online.
Very offline. So we do an offline on that. And now it's offline. So back settings and drive. And I pick that up and zoom. Apply and zoom.
So it's a pass-through disk.
Correct. And then we do a connect, and then we power it on. And it's going to do a mini version. It's going to do a semi-plug-and-play. It's going to be somewhere between a real plug-and-play and no plug-and-play. So it's going to detect new hardware. It's going to do that for each and every unique machine it finds. So for every unique machine, it saves a profile, like the old hardware profile we had in NT4 that doesn't exist But it actually does exist, and they are still using that. You just can't see that. So it's going to do some kind of plug-and-play enumeration if it wasn't running on this machine. So now you can verify it works. It has access to the network. You can log on. You can try all these things. We have learned so far that if we are going to have this, I know where you work, and if you want to have a new badge, you need to go to one of these officers to get a badge. And the smart thing is to verify that the badge works before you leave the security officer thingy stuff room. You do the same thing with Windows to Go. Let the user come down to the IT department. That's a scary trip, I know, but they're going to find you eventually. And then they sign off, and then you say, well, you know, go to that machine, verify it works, log on with your account, so everything works as it should. A couple of things that you should remember is that if you are using roaming profiles, maybe you should reconsider. Because it takes a while to log on. There are settings you can do for primary device and Active Directory that solves those problems. But you really need to have a proof of concept and verify that it works with normal users, because it's always going to work with you, because none of you are using roaming profiles. You most likely stopped doing that 10 years ago, but the users are still using that. How do you do with applications on a Windows to Go stick? Well, let's see what we have here. That was the driver stuff. Custom install application. Pretty much the same application goes in, but as you can see, I also added the UEV agent. That is the roaming agent for settings stored in the home folder. That means that you can log on to multiple devices and keep the settings for your application consistent cross operating system. Or you do have the app V agent. So instead of installing Office, they stream down it. So they can actually fire up on any machine and just fire Office. And since it has a direct access or a VPN connection back to the Office, they're going to download the application pretty fast. You can install the Configuration Manager on this device. It will be fully supported and manageable, so you can actually use it as a traditional computer.
And obviously, AppV and those components are part of MDOP, which you need to have a license for to be able to use.
Yes. Except
it was a terminal server, I think there was an exception.
Yeah, in terminal server, you don't need to have that, that's true. But let's say you want to create a VDI device. You need to create a reference. Someone walks into your room and say, do you know anything about VDI? And the correct answer is no. We're going to run that next week, so we need an image. Thank you for the
heads up
on a week. Yeah. So how do you fix that? Well, you start.
Probably said it would be the last week.
You start using Bing, and then you find something, maybe. And eventually you will find this.
Mr. Bennett, could it be?
Yes.
Yeah.
Jonathan Bennett. He has an Auto IT Tools that has been around forever. He also used that to create a VDI optimizer. This was created for Windows 7, but it pretty much applies also to Windows 8 and 8.1. So you can use this application to create a VB script, and then you put that VB script in as an application, and that will correct some part of the imaging process to make the image faster. That's nice. After a while, you realize that you should go to another site. You should go to this one. And it's actually using the same application. It's just that they added another set of settings.
He's actually here at TechEd, Jeff. I saw him running around in the expo area.
This is really good. So if you open that in Notepad++, you're going to see there's a lot of things they are turning off. And it's like, hey, that's cool. But I would never use this script. What I would do instead is to take these, copy them, open up.
Wait.
Exactly, wait. It's when the kids ask, what do you do? The answer is, watch progress bars. And then you go to disable features and function, and then you go to add, general, run command line, and then you put it that way. This way you can enable and disable each of every step. Instead of modifying the script over and over again, since it's a VB script, I mean, if it's a VB script and you walk, bypass it, and sneeze, it's destroyed. I mean, it doesn't matter what you do with a VB script, it's like, oh, can't do that. It's a syntax error. It's something is missing. So I put each and every one of them as a command instead. That is easier, and then you can have one setting for Windows 7, you can copy in between. Or you can create a VB script wrapper around that command to get a perfect good logging. Now, after a while, you're going to realize that an image that has been patched for a considerable time, it contains a lot of patches. Anybody here recognize a folder name called the WinSSXS folder?
Never heard of.
Anybody notice that it tends to grow over time? Now, in Windows 8.1, we actually have a process that tries to clean that up after 30 days. Well, after 30 days, I already deployed the machine, so it didn't give the benefit of having a smaller image. And if you're running VDI, nobody's running a VDI for 30 days, and nobody wants to have an automated cleanup task after 30 days on 4,000 VDI machines that is going to kill the SAN.
Yeah, but you could start a deployment, have a suspend, and you wait 30 days, and then you continue the sequence.
Yes, or you could run this command.
That's an option too.
Yeah, so this command is actually one of those options. We have been showing this for the week, and someone said, wow, I didn't know that. The dism.exe/online cleanup image start component cleanup/reset base is going to clean up and remove all the duplicates and all the old patches. The only downside with /reset base is that you cannot uninstall a patch. I told one of you attendees here that this week, and he was like, great, that's exactly what I want. I don't want anyone to uninstall our security patches because this is our baseline, and you're not supposed to do that. Now, you remember that Johan said that if you want to do a reference image, you need to have a separate WSUS server? That is great. Now it means that we can have one team that decides for security patches and patches that goes into the reference image, and you do a reset base. The configuration manager team could add additional patches, but you haven't run them so many times, so you're not really sure that you don't need to uninstall them
can
ever.
Can I steal the screen for a second?
Yes, for one second.
3 seconds. Yesterday, or the day before yesterday it was, Microsoft announced that this process is now also available for Server 2012 R2 SP1. It's been something that's been requested by the community for a long time. It's been available for Windows 7, but as of yesterday, it's also available for Server 2008 R2. And trust me on this, if you run Windows Update through SUS on the Windows 2008 R2 box, there are quite many updates being installed in the year of 2014.
Yep.
So you actually reduce that image quite a lot, and also, of course, reduces the size of the WIM file eventually, which makes it easier to deploy it. All right, now we can have the screen back.
That's good, because I have just one more demo, and then we are done. And I have 5 minutes and 40 seconds to cope with that, and we should be good. So Johan told you or showed you that he has a PowerShell script to create VMs to create a reference image, and that's great. But it's much cooler to have an image factory. So this is a PowerShell script that has the ability to create every task sequence that you have in a folder called REF. It's going to create one VM per task sequence, install, sysprep, capture, upload, turn off, build the next one, and the next one, and the next one, and that's watching paint dry.
You are bragging about you being able to add a loop to the same script.
No, no. Not only that. So the difference between this is that instead of doing all this, because I handled that too, should you use a MAC address, I need to identify the machines.
I hate to admit that it's actually quite a nice script.
So what we do here is that we add an extra folder. In that extra folder, we have a user exit script together with the what's called the key value pair exchange components for Hyper-V. They are not really in Windows PE, but you can force them in.
Kick them in.
Yeah. So if we go to that folder, I'm going to remove that really fast. Go and go into this folder, MDT build lab. Let's go into the extra folder. You're going to see that we have DevCon together with all the integration components for Hyper-V. And then we have, in this folder, scripts, which is called load KVP in WinP VBS. And promise not to laugh, but this is very funny. What we do is that we create a fake service, because we need to have a service to make this work. So we create a service that doesn't do anything at all, and then we can load the components, because the components is dependent on a service that doesn't do anything. So just create it, and it works. Doing that means that we now, from within Windows PE, know the virtual machine name. The virtual machine name is going to have the same name as the task sequence. Therefore, it's automatically going to pick up the task sequence, because it's believing that the name of the computer is the task sequence name, which it just happened
to be. This feature is used to pass information between the Hyper-V host and, in this case, WinPE, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
Unless the console crashed.
Yeah.
That's a feature.
Yeah. I've seen it before. So we have a couple of options here. Let's do a get ref image task sequence. And if I do a get ref image task sequence, we're going to use PowerShell to connect to MDT and get all the task sequences. So to kick this off, this is the command you run. And new.
Do a CLS. So every.
I mean, see. New auto gen ref images. That is the command to get everything that is in that specific folder and to create a VM for everything. We run this over and over time. It takes about 26 hours to run every reference image we have for every operating system in every flavor. And it's very nice to do nothing during that time.
Of course, it's available for
download. You can find this on deploymentbunny.com. It's called the Image Factory version 2.
We would like to, if you want to learn more about these technologies and background, we have authored quite a few books around the years. One of them is ours. The other two are from other MVPs that are here at TechEd, but they are all related to deployment one way or another. We are releasing a new book in about 2 weeks' time, which is a PowerShell book. Should be great fun. And we would like to ask you to, for all means, check out all these different sessions on TechEd. Most of them are recorded, the one has been already. And all these nifty websites around OSD. Now, Channel 9 has the recordings, TechNet has the labs I talked about. And please remember to fill in the eval. And as always, 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 be honest, but gentle. And thank you for taking your time.
Thank you.
All right, we'll be here for the next session too. So if you want to hang out for the OSD Q&A, feel free to do that.